It is 2 o'clock on this Wednesday afternoon, midweek, and snowy. Hey, how's it going? It's the 25th of February, 2015. Welcome back to the program. Welcome to the radio. It's Talk in the Afternoons here on News 95.7. Yeah, there's snow, and there's more coming. Seeing that it's starting to lighten up, at least snow-wise, down towards Yarmouth, Shelburne Way. Eventually it'll clear here. But what say you, Rick Howell? Roads aren't the greatest, and the kids are already dismissed. So you can only imagine what the roads will be like, and that whole debate over whether schools need to be closed. We can take on that debate at some point today or not. Lots to talk about on the show for sure. We're going to hear from the Progressive Conservative member, Eddie Orrell. He's suggesting that the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act officer should be a designate of the House and not of government. There's an argument to be made there. We're going to talk a little bit to Michael Pickup, the Auditor General, who released his report today, suggesting every man, woman, and child in this province is deeply in debt and getting deeper. We're going to hear some reaction to that from the Liberal Finance Critic, the Conservative Finance Critic, Tim Houston. Tim's going to be on the program a little later this afternoon. We're going to hear about things out at the airport. We're going to talk about the MMA fight. We got a title or two on the line here this weekend in Halifax. We'll tell you about that. And we're going to talk about climate change warnings and labels, perhaps, on gas pumps. Maybe that's something that you've thought about or not. We're talking about AUS men's and women's basketball, the big championships. I think the schedule opens, tomorrow night? Big basketball event, Atlantic University Sport in our fair city. And we're going to entertain you with some talk about that. Looking forward to a chat with Kristen Lipscomb about that. But at 2:02 on the program, our next guest will welcome to the airwaves, Corporate Research Associates is the company he's been the chairman and CEO of. And today they released some results on consumer confidence levels and how we're feeling about the job our municipal government is doing. We say good afternoon to Don Mills. Are you serious when you said maybe we should have our vacation in January and February, make kids go to school in the summer?
The sarcasm from my mother's side of the family. And every once in a while it comes out. And, I guess when faced with ridiculous situations, you have to go somewhere, and I go to sarcasm.
Well,
but the more I think about it, and maybe, might resolve some of these problems.
It might be an idea. I know that one of the reasons that the schools don't have air conditioning is because the kids don't go in school. So then we'd have the heat to deal with, and people would say we need to spend more on our schools. It's never nothing. It's always something, right, Don?
It sure is.
All right. Consumer confidence levels here in Halifax, they went down slightly. What time period are we talking about? When was your recent poll conducted?
Well, we just completed it in the first part of the February, so it would cover the last three months leading up to that. The good news is that the numbers are still in what we consider positive territory. So we have an index, and anything over 100 is considered to be positive. And by that, I mean that people are feeling that it's a normal time to be able to spend and be confident in the economy. We spent most of the last 2 years in positive territory in Halifax after coming off a negative period. So, that's reasonably good. It means that consumers will spend normally. It means that the economy will be supported by consumer spending in a normal fashion. But, we're not out of the woods in terms of, the economic conditions for sure.
So I'm looking at this chart. On the left-hand side, in the Consumer Confidence Index, 70 to 130. The bottom is quarterly. I think it's quarterly. Mm-hmm. And the big dip down about 80 was in February of 08. November of 08, February, in that time period.
February 09 is actually 09, when it hit. And that was when the recession really hit in Canada, generally speaking. So that was actually the lowest level of consumer confidence that we'd ever recorded in 25 years of doing this work. So, it was an indication, I guess, that people were impacted by the recession pretty directly. We recovered from that over the next year, but it's been kind of up and down since then. Of course, that reflects kind of an up and down economy that we have, not just in Halifax but across this region.
How much of it is, the stories we hear in the news, and things are going well, things aren't going well. The bank rate's holding steady. Price of gas went up.
Yeah, well, I to some extent, I actually thought that we might see a bump in consumer confidence this quarter because of gas and oil prices, because that would benefit Nova Scotians. And I don't know if you knew this or not, but Nova Scotians have the highest dependency in oil heat of any province in the country. About 60% of households are heated with oil. So, when the oil prices come down, that you actually save a fair amount of money on top of the money that you save on gas. So I actually thought that we would see a bump in consumer confidence. So I was a bit surprised by the fact that it went down slightly.
Now, on the left-hand side of the graph, is that percentage?
No, that's an index. So anything 100 or above would be considered normal. The higher it is above 100, the more people are feeling buoyant about the economy. Anything below 100 would be negative, and the further you go, the least optimistic people would be about the economy. Would maybe start changing their spending behavior a little bit, maybe not taking that trip because they can't afford, or going to a movie because they don't feel like it's a good time to go to a movie or whatever.
And you say you do these every quarter, and yep. The last result, it was down just a little bit from the quarter.
Yeah, it's not significant. To what we're trying to do is, Sheldon, is look at trends over a long period of time. That's why we provide a trend graph that goes back more than 15 years to kind of show you the ups and downs. And the interesting thing that if you look at this graph, and I invite people to go to our website to have a look at the graph, it's very interesting that up until 2008, we spent a lot of time in positive territory in Halifax. And since 2008 and the recession, we've been much further down in terms of confidence. And this really reflects a weak economy generally. And we see it across the province, we see it across the region in exactly the same way. So we have spent more time in negative territory in the last 7 years than we did in the previous 8 years. Significantly more time in negative territory, which reflects, some concern about the health of the economy. And I think I've said this to you before, that also reflects the fact that a lot of people during this period have not received any wage increases. So while the cost of living has gone up, their ability to have more discretionary money to spend on the fun things of life has actually gone down. So that's always going to affect people, how people feel about the confidence in the economy.
Now, this consumer confidence index is about, obviously, the title says it. And then when we talk about municipal or satisfaction with municipal government, do we see any correlation there?
Well, in the sense that if you look over the last couple of years with a new council, a downsized council, and a new mayor, those numbers have actually been pretty consistent with the level of consumer confidence. In fact, the consumer confidence under the previous council and mayor was actually quite a bit lower, and the election of the current council increased confidence in the economy. And we see this quite often with the election of new government. It happened with the McNeill government that when they were first elected, consumer confidence in the province went up. Same thing happened in New Brunswick with the election of the new Liberal government there. There is a relationship and association with confidence in how well the province is being governed and people's confidence in the economy. What we see with the performance numbers, and again, I invite your viewers to go and have a look at this on our website, is that over the last nearly 2 years, there's been a fairly consistent rating and a favorable rating of the City Council under Mayor Savage's leadership, and it's operated within a fairly narrow band. Basically 7 out of 10 people have been satisfied with the performance of the Municipal Council over the last couple years since Mayor Savage got elected, and those numbers are actually pretty good for a politician to have 7 out of 10 satisfaction is in these days, it's actually a pretty good score.
Looking at what you're suggesting are, you know, numbers that are out of this quarter, I'm wondering if this snow and ice fatigue might weigh differently in the next quarter with results.
Well, you know, part of the survey was done during this period, so, you know, it may have an impact on it. I'm not sure. We'll have to wait and see, because we do it every 3 months, and that's the advantage of doing a regular research, that you can look at trends and see if they're holding up or changing in some regard. But, you know, again, looking back over the last couple of years since the election of this council and the new mayor, those numbers are very solid numbers. So the way that we look at it is any time you get over 60% satisfaction at any level of government, you're doing well. And so if you get this close to 70, you're doing really well. And anything over 70 is kind of in star territory.
Yeah, I see Moncton is performing well, the council there. So is Fredericton. St. John is a little slightly under what Halifax was.
And each of those municipalities actually have very good mayors at the moment. Mayor LeBlanc in Moncton is a very good mayor. Mel Norton in St. John is a very young new mayor who's taken over from a mayor that was not very popular. And Mayor Woodside in Fredericton is kind of the star of the pack at the moment in terms of satisfaction. He's got 75% satisfaction, which is a really, really good number.
You know, there are times that media gets accused of being, you know, on the negative side. Would it make any difference if you called it, instead of consumer confidence, consumer optimism? It's more about how optimistic we are, maybe not as confident. I'm just curious.
Well, you know, you might equate it to optimism, but this is based on a basket of questions that we ask, and it has to do with purchase intentions on major items as well. So it's not just, you know, feeling good. It looks at behavior and whether or not people intend to maybe shop a big ticket item, and so it's a combination of intentions versus sentiment, I suppose, and so it's a little bit more than optimism, because it indicates some action to based on how they feel about making purchases.
Your questions, do they go even as far as, you know, houses and cars?
Pardon me?
When you're asking about consumer intentions, do you ask about big ticket items like cars and homes?
We do that research separately, but we do ask the general question about intentions to make a major purchase in the next 6 months. And so when we have more people feeling that it's a better time than a worse time, then that usually is an indication that consumer confidence is on the positive side. And that is the case currently for Halifax.
And it seems as though consumer confidence is pretty even across the board, slightly lower in St. John. Any reason?
Yep, there's a fundamental reason, and St. John is the only urban area in the region that is suffering from high unemployment. Their unemployment number in January, I think, is, you know, nearly double digits. I think it's 9.6 or something like that, and in Halifax it's 6 and change. So their economy is not working quite as well as the other municipal units that we survey, and so that has an impact on consumer confidence, because people are much more worried about jobs and in the future in those kinds of situations. And, you know, St. John has suffered from some really difficult times in the last few years. If you may recall that they had the energy hub discussion, and mm-hmm. during that period they had the highest confidence in all of Atlantic Canada.
Right.
And, you know, the new Irving World Headquarters was going to be built, a second refinery, the LNG plant, you know, there was a lot of positive things that were being spoken at that time. And, of course, it went all away, and to some extent it took away the optimism in that city, and they kind of suffered from that sense. Now, having said that, they've got a couple things coming in St. John that will make a big difference. The Energy East pipeline is going to be a big help. There's discussion about having a new fertilizer plant using potash reserves in New Brunswick in St. John itself that could create 400 permanent jobs, high-paying jobs. So, you know, they have some things on the horizon, I think, that will make a big difference. They spent a lot of money in upgrading the Irving pulp and paper mill there recently. It's put hundreds of millions of dollars into the economy or locally. there are some things that are happening, and most importantly, I think they have better leadership at the municipal council level. That it's early days, but I think that should make a big difference over the longer term.
Interesting. In many ways, where Irving goes, so does the confidence.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you've seen this, but JDI, which is now separate from Irving Oil, in the last year, that organization hired 2,900 people. And the next 3 years, they have plans to hire 7,800 people. And 90% of that will be in Atlantic Canada. And most of that will be either in New Brunswick and in Nova Scotia. So if anybody's looking for a job, go to JDI Careers and follow them, because they're going to have a lot of them.
All righty. I appreciate this. And just before we go, I just see here across the newswire that former Deputy Prime Minister Anne McClellan has been named the new chancellor for Dalhousie University. I was wondering where she has been. Now we know.
Wow, that's a bit of a surprise, I must say.
That's news. She's been out of politics for a while, but interesting.
Yeah, well, that is, does she even live here, or where does she live, I wonder?
She was originally from here. I knew that, and she'd been in Edmonton for quite a few years.
That's a bit of a surprise.
Coming back.
Good for her.
All right, Don, thank you very much, and I appreciate your update and the work you do.
Okay, anytime.
All the best.
Bye.
Don Mills, Chairman and CEO of Corporate Research Associates. And yeah, that's kind of an interesting story. Again, just coming across the newswire here. Dalhousie University naming former Deputy Prime Minister of Canada, Anne McClellan, as the new chancellor. She will be installed as the 7th chancellor coming up on the 25th of May, originally from Nova Scotia. And she is chair of Dalhousie's Advisory Council. And she got an arts degree from Dal in 71. Graduated from law school in 74, and she was out west for a number of years, and as mentioned, taking over from Fred Fountain, who was chancellor since 08. That's 2:16 here on the program, and in just a few moments, as we're talking university, we're going to talk about university sport. In fact, AUS men's and women's basketball championships coming to Halifax. We're going to take on that topic with someone who knows far more than I do, which is just about everyone, Kirsten Lipscomb, in just a few seconds. All right, 2:19, almost 2:20 here on the show, and it is a snowy afternoon, a snow day. School's canceled in much of Nova Scotia, and we have, of course, early dismissal in many of the schools here in Halifax. Universities, though, it's business as usual as far as we know. This coming weekend, it is the joint Subway AUS Men's and Women's Basketball Championships. First time both the women's and men's will be hosted together in one location over the weekend. 5 women's games, 5 men's games played starting tomorrow right through until Sunday at Scotiabank Center in Halifax. And someone I'm sure who is much more up to speed than I about what's going to happen is our next guest. It's Metro sports reporter Kirsten Lipscomb. Kirsten, are you going to be covering this big tournament this weekend?
I'll be there for much of the weekend. It should be pretty fun. It's at the Scotiabank Center, so it's a great venue for it. So, yeah, it'll be good.
Going to be a double header tomorrow night to open things up, eh?
That's right. It's going to be fun. It starts off with on the women's side, actually. You've got St. Mary's and Dalhousie playing for day one, and then the men start their tournament on Friday.
All right. Now, I did see as well that two-time Olympic gold medalist Heather Moyes is going to address the participants at a luncheon on Friday. She's a keynote speaker there. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, so she'll be there, as well as Tracy McCush. She's the honorary guest as well, so she'll be there. She's a great local basketball player, record-breaking. A lot of great people coming this weekend for the AUS championships.
And it's really exciting to know that both are going to be happening in the same city, in the same place, at the same time. Do we know, why they chose to do this now and why it hasn't happened before?
I'm not sure why it hasn't happened before like this, but they have made a big deal about it this season. It's twice the action, twice the passion is the slogan they're using, and I guess why not, right?
It makes sense. Perfectly sensible idea to do it. I'll admit it's been a long time since I've followed basketball, and to get to this level, it's going to be some great competition. What can you tell me about the teams involved?
On the men's side, Dalhousie St. Mary's play Friday. Dalhousie's taking on, this is for the men's, Dalhousie takes on Cape Breton. Dalhousie finished fifth, Cape Breton fourth. Then Memorial and St. Mary's play. Memorial finished sixth, St. Mary's in third. And then they go on to Saturday for semifinals. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
And on the women's side?
On the women's side, hold on a second here. It starts tomorrow, so they actually kick things off. hopefully the weather holds out.
Yeah, really.
Actually come out to hard to see. It's pretty crazy out there now.
Yeah. We're kind of getting a little bit tired of this weather.
Yeah.
A little bit of fatigue.
Yeah, absolutely. So on the women's side, actually St. Mary's and Dalhousie have a bye straight to semifinals.
Okay.
So you have Cape Breton and Memorial playing tomorrow, and UMB and UPEI. And then the St. Mary's plays at 12 o'clock on Saturday against the winner of that first quarterfinal, and then Dalhousie plays at 2:15 against the winner of quarterfinal number two.
Yeah, there's a website, I guess, aushoops.ca. So these are regional. These are the Atlantic Championships. The winners move on to national?
Yeah, exactly. So CIS, yeah, they'll go on to that. And, you know, basketball, we also have AUS playoffs going on for the men's and women's hockey as well. So St. Mary's is in a semifinal series right now, and they're going to game five Thursday against Acadia. And then both Dallas and St. Mary's on the women's side are in semifinals right now.
Well, so. I appreciate you talking about basketball because I know hockey is a passion for you.
No problem. No, it'll be a fun weekend, a busy one. The Rainmen and the Mooseheads are on the road as well, so there's a lot going on. So,
you know, we have fewer teams than most of the other leagues, university leagues across the country, and there's been some question about, you know, football and the struggle there, the challenges when it comes to the national stage. We seem to do well though with hoops, don't we?
Yeah, we're pretty competitive. I mean, you know, it's always a struggle for out here to some extent, but we've had some success nationally in the past year. So you never know what's going to happen. Like, it's great competition here to watch. I mean, if you come out to watch basketball or hockey, you know, it's just great, dedicated athletes. So you never know what can happen.
You know, yeah, hockey's quick. Basketball, it makes me sweat just watching them run back and forth.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
All right. Well, Kristen, thank you very much. Appreciate it. And enjoy your weekend of sport.
Thank you very much.
And we'll be looking for you. We'll be looking for you in the paper.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye. That is Metro reporter Kristen Lipscomb here talking a little bit about the AUS Men's and Women's Basketball Championships, the hockey as well. Just looking at the Atlantic University Sport website, they will be broadcasting, webcasting games. You can always log in. That's www.austv.ca if you want to find out more. As mentioned, Dalhousie taking on Cape Breton. That'll be on Friday. That's the first quarterfinal. And then Memorial take on St. Mary's. And into Saturday, first place UNB will be taking on the winner of the first qualifier, and then it's on from there, and with the finals on Sunday. That's on the men's side, and on the women's schedule, there was a doubleheader, as mentioned, tomorrow. As I scroll down to see Cape Breton and Memorial with UNB and UPEI tomorrow night, and then everything continue with the semifinals on Saturday, the final on Sunday. Lots and lots of b-ball, lots of hoops action. Okie dokie, 2:26. We're going to quickly get set to move on to, we've got a break coming up in just a few moments. We'll be coming back from that with a chat, a little bit of politics here this afternoon. The Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Officer is a warrant of the government. And by that, I mean they answer to the Premier, for the most part, to government, not necessarily to the rest of the House. That's something that the opposition would like to see changed. We'll have a little conversation about that. We'll also be telling you about Robert Shirky, Our Horizon, climate change warning labels on gas pumps. And he'll be talking with us about that. We're going to hear from Michael Pickup, the Auditor General, to tell us about how much money we all owe. It's a lot. In fact, per capita, each and every one of us owe $15,659 each. That's up 6%. We're going to find out. Obviously, we're not in great shape financially. What is the Auditor General recommending to help us dig out of that hole? And can you, in fact, dig out of the hole? And 2 years in the making, Ship Cove Native is making an MMA return with a title shot on the line. We're going to be talking all about the ECC 22 event coming up this weekend. Gavin Tucker, we'll be talking with Gavin. Also, we'll be talking with Ryan Connors as Peter Martell gets us up to speed about what the event is all about this weekend. A quick break, a news update, and we'll be back in just a few moments after that. Stick around. All right, how crappy is it out there? On the roads this afternoon, probably not all that great. We've got that switchover, the changeover to rain right now. Sloppy, slushy, slippery too. Slow down, get there safely this afternoon, and keep it locked right here on News 95.7. We'll keep you up to speed with traffic and news and all that that you need to know on a Wednesday afternoon. Well, welcome back to the program. It's Sheldon McLeod with you. News and talk in the afternoons coming up in just about less than an hour. Michael Pickup, the Provincial Auditor General, is going to be on the show to tell us how poor our economy is performing. We'll talk with Jerry Staples to let you know how well Halifax Stanfield International is doing. We're also going to be hearing from Dave Adler and tell you about sustainable food fishery in Nova Scotia. All good here this afternoon. We were talking with Don Mills off the top, a little discussion about the satisfaction in our mayor and council. And I had asked if perhaps this fatigue from what had been happening with the weather may affect the approval or satisfaction rating. And I had one person tweeting at us, snow and ice affecting Mayor Savage's satisfaction rating. That would be stupid. I think there's a little tongue-in-cheek there, going back to a comment the mayor made on our show. But right now, we're going to turn our attention to the Freedom of Information Officer. The FOIPOP officer right now is not an independent officer of the legislature, and that is something our next guest and his party would like to see change. Northside Westmount MLA Eddie Orrell is our guest. And Mr. Orrell, how would it help us, how would it help you as opposition if the officer was independent?
Well, we'd like to know the independence of the officer so that any information we got wouldn't have any interference from the government, knowing that if we put in a request for information, the information would go back to the best of her ability and not have the government do any kind of interference, because they wouldn't have the ability to do that.
You know, Darce Farty was asking for that. He was our first Freedom of Information Officer in Nova Scotia, and he has come and gone, and here we have another officer, same old, and we're not having much pickup or uptake by government. Why is that?
I think that the government likes to have that little bit of extra control just in case something comes up that they don't want out there in the public, that they'd be able to put their hands into keeping that from coming. We put forward to bring the officer to the committee back in the spring, the fall sitting, and they put the poo-poo to that. They wouldn't let us bring her in at that time, so I think there's something that they may want to hide. They'd like to be able to do that.
You know, Rodney McDonald, John Hamm both could have done it, and they didn't. So, and again, not to cast aspersions on your party, but it sounds like government in general, no matter the party in power, isn't all that interested in making that change.
Yes, but the Steve McGill government promised that they would have the most open and transparent government in the country and probably in the world. So if that's the case, they should do this now and move forward and forget about what happened in the past. And if they want to be the most open and transparent government, they would do this to allow that to happen.
You know, this is most of us in the who aren't in the media would say, I don't really care. FOIPOP doesn't matter to me one way or the other. You as opposition, I mean, tell me how the FOIPOP legislation helps you do your job.
Well, when we're looking for something that may be of importance to the people of the province of Nova Scotia, using the FOIPOP officer, we know that we get the information. It's information that she's researched to the best of her ability, and something that may help us to either, when you look at the Yarmouth Ferry, there was $2.5 million hit in the Yarmouth Ferry update over Christmas. We'd be able to access that information through the FOIPOP officer, and if she was independent of government, she'd be able to provide that without having interference from that government.
You know, I've sent off applications before, and the legislation is written in a way that it protects private contracts, it protects third-party confidentiality. In many ways, government would say, well, you know, if you just want to ask our departments, we should be able to give the information you're looking for, since, you know, all the stuff that may be damaging is probably going to be protected anyway.
Yeah, but then at least we'd have to go to the FOIPOP officer to get that information. Damning to the government is one thing, but if we're going to be open and transparent and spend the province's taxpayers' dollars wisely, the province wants, the taxpayers want to know that. So using the FOIA pop officer, we can know if that's the actual case.
You know, you brought up the ferry, and I think that's an important point to take on. The ethics commissioner had looked into it and said that at the time the minister gave the information, only the information that we were entitled to. Is there not, I guess, a bigger question? If you know, part of the legislation says within 30 days this must be disclosed, but up until 30 days we're all SOL.
Well, the other side of that story is. He was asked specifically, was there any more other money given out to the Yarmouth Ferry? And he declined to say that no, there was not. And then the ethics commissioner came back and said that he was able to disclose that at his convenience. We're not saying that it shouldn't be disclosed. It should be disclosed. We're spending taxpayers' dollars. And for him to say no, that there was no other money spent at that time, I'm not saying it was the wrong thing to say, but if they want to be the most open and transparent government, and they want the province of Nova Scotia to know where our money is going. The question would have been, did they spend more money than that? Yes, we did, but we didn't want to bring that up right now because it was something to do with a secret or a code or whatever. But to come out and say, no, they didn't spend it, then that's an issue with us.
There was another story that came across the papers yesterday, and your name is in it. It was talking about 6 of 9 people proposed for the new provincial health authority's board are donors to the provincial Liberal Party. Did that information come through FOIPOP?
We got that information yesterday before committee that these people were going to be brought up for the new district health authority. And I'm not saying those people aren't good people, that they probably wouldn't make good board members, but we were told there was 59 people applied for those board positions. It's funny that 6 of those 9 were big Liberal donors to the party, and they may be the best people for the job. We asked to see the list of who was there just to make sure that that was the case. We hoped that these people would be independent. My concern is that if something come up that needed to be put in the province in a couple of different constituencies, who's to say that those constituencies who had Liberal representation wouldn't get that before another constituency because of that loyalty to the Liberal Party?
You know, Eddie Orrell's on the phone with us here this afternoon. The reason I asked if that came via FOIPOP is you're talking about making the officer independent of government. But this was information that was handed over to anyone in committee. This was damaging information, at least in the effect that all it took was a quick search of publicly accessible records of donations to political parties. So I guess in some ways, FOIPOP isn't the be-all, end-all when it comes to getting information about the actions of our government.
No, it's not the be-all, end-all, but for stuff that they don't want to give us, then that's something that we can research through the FOIPOP commissioner. They don't have to disclose that information to us, but the FOIPOP commissioner would see that that information was disclosed to us. And as a matter of fact, they decided not to put those people forward yesterday at the committee to put them on that committee right away because they said they want to hold off until they can put all 13 people forward. It's funny that they're going to start a new district health authority, one for the whole province of Nova Scotia, and that board is going to go in place 2 weeks before it actually takes place. Not a very good way to start off something that's probably one of the biggest decisions in our province to date.
No question. I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you know how much, as the official opposition, the Conservatives spend on FOIPOP applications?
That's not something I could tell you offhand. I don't know, Sheldon.
Yep.
If I knew that, I would tell you.
No, and I'm not trying to, you know, be funny or glib. I'm just curious because what some of our listeners may not be aware of is that as opposition, you are given a budget, and you have researchers, and you have people who are constantly looking at the actions of government. And, you know, it's all part of this bigger, broader discussion about open and transparent.
Yes. Yep. And our job as opposition is to hold the government in account of what they're doing and what they're doing for the people in the province of Nova Scotia. And that's part of what our budget is used for.
Are you liking politics, Eddie?
So far, so good. We can't say anything too bad yet. I'm very happy that I did that and being able to represent the good people in Northside Westbound, but just the province in general as well.
And can you help me? I'm curious, what kind of an attitude is in the House? Do you find that you all know you're on different teams, but do you get along in the hallways?
Oh, I get along with everybody. I have no reason not to. Everybody's been courteous to me and cordial, and I'd like to think that I'm the same with everybody in there. I don't like to see, we're not going to have a very good provincial representation if we're all fighting and bickering all the time. We have to be able to work together in order to make the province successful.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show and telling us a little bit about this and about the issue over FOIPOP. You know, sometimes it sounds like inside baseball for people who don't really pay a whole lot of attention to it, but these are important issues. So thanks again.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me, Sheldon.
All the best.
Bye-bye.
Northside Westmount MLA Eddie Oro, the Progressive Conservative. He's also the Human Resources Committee member, and again, he was calling on government to make this officer independent of the legislature. They put forward a bill recently. It was early last year, near the end of the fall session. Liberals rejected it, and according to what Eddie Oro put out in his news release, they rejected saying it. They had more important business to take care of. And he's hoping now that the FOIPOP officer herself is requesting independence, they'll think twice and do the same, the competent thing. But again, as I'd mentioned, Dars Fardy, the first information officer we had in this province, was also asking for that very same thing a long time ago. And, well, he's retired from the position and still hasn't happened. All right, 2:42 on the program. Don't know a lot about our next guest. I did happen across a news article talking about sticking it to fossil fuels. A Halifax talk that's upcoming. Dalhousie is expected to talk about climate change, warning on gas nozzles. Maybe we should talk about this debate. Global warming versus climate change, right? Global warming gives us a picture, doesn't it? That picture doesn't necessarily include 5-foot-high icy snowbanks, slushy roads, and debates over pickle juice on the roads. But climate change, that kind of says something else, right? We're going back to the same kind of weather we had when some of you were kids. And really, this is an interesting discussion to be taking on this afternoon's show, and kind of making the analogy that there are ugly warnings on cigarette packs. Maybe we need to have that same information on gas nozzles. We're going to talk about that when we come back. Quick break, then Robert Shirky will be on the show. Hey, I just saw a Facebook posting by Carolyn Parker, you know, of Griffin Caroline. Yeah, she says, got to love Nova Scotia. 10 centimeters of snow and thunder and lightning. What? Really? Apparently there's some thunder and lightning in this snowstorm. We do have 10 or more centimeters of snow in the forecast, and we have temperatures expected tonight back down below freezing, which means, yeah, you know, shovel. Yeah, I'll be taking a couple of days off to shovel, just so you know. Darling Dan Allstrand will be in this chair here tomorrow. Invite you to stick around and be nice to him. Still come on the show, and just on the other side of the top of the hour, it'll be NDP leader, interim leader Maureen McDonald. We'll be hearing from the Auditor General, and we'll be talking MMA, mixed martial art fight, with the big event for this weekend coming our way, and we're going to hear from Peter Martell all about it. Invite you to stick around for that conversation here today. But right now, we're going to turn our attention to climate change. And in many ways, that's a whole lot different than global warming. At least it gets your head into a different place. Robert Shirky is a lawyer. He's the executive director for a nonprofit group by the name of Our Horizon. And he'll be at Dalhousie University's Schulich School of Law tonight at 6:30. And it's about a campaign to have municipalities across the country climate change information on the gas pumps. And Robert Shirky joins us on the line. Robert Shirky, tell me, how will that help? How will putting warnings on pumps help?
Thank you for having me on your program, Sheldon. So it's a really simple idea. It's a simple, low-cost intervention that I think what it would do is, right now, this idea for many of us, climate change, it's sort of far away, it's distant, it's abstract. We don't think about it day to day, so I think we fail to address it. This idea makes it a little more tangible, a little more real, makes us feel more connected to us, and creates then a greater impetus for us to actually address it. So you could think of it as being a catalyst for change. I think then government will respond. They'll have a little bit more freedom to perhaps make proposals like funding public transit and so on. And I think you'll see business then incentivized to innovate to sort of meet the needs of a shifting marketplace.
In your brain, what do you envision these labels? What will they look like? What will they tell us?
Well, they're kind of modeled after the tobacco labels. So picture on the top half, and I picture these being right on the gas pump nozzles themselves, where often there's a 3-inch by 3-inch sort of an advertisement. So picture instead of that, on the top half, there might be an image that conveys an impact of climate change. So it could be extinction of species, ocean acidification, extreme weather. And then below that, just some text that might say something like, caution or warning, use of this product contributes to climate change, which may cause. And then that's when you highlight that impact. So the idea then is just to help us establish, sort of on the demand side of the equation, this connection to this problem. In Canada, discourse on climate change tends to be focused upstream, so it's a problem of oil sands, of pipelines, of offshore shipping, and so on. But as long as on the demand side of the equation, we as consumers just use the product and don't even think twice about it, we're actually going to perpetuate the status quo. So this helps marketplaces make that connection and then incentivize the shift to something more sustainable.
Robert, have you been to California?
I would love to go. I have not. But they've actually passed this in Berkeley, and they're about to do the same in San Francisco. So we're getting some traction on the West Coast.
That's what I was going to ask, because California culture has for a long time, and legislators have for the longest time, been very upfront about putting warnings on just about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, here in Canada, there are some products we see that are imported that say clearly on it, and in California, and you know, but does education on something so big really, does it really hit home? Does it really make a difference? Or am I just going to ignore it like I ignored the fact that cigarettes cause cancer?
Yeah, well, so interestingly enough, the tobacco warning labels do actually work, and there are studies that show that. But what I think is, and this is why I encourage people to come to this longer lecture tonight at Dalhousie's Law School at 6:30, if you think about part of the nature of climate change and part of human nature, it's sort of this problem of no feedback. So we burn fossil fuels today, the consequences of which aren't experienced until tomorrow. So I think in the absence of that feedback, we move forward in maladaptive ways. And there's something that psychologists have identified, they call it the current moment bias. And it's this idea that we as individuals, we tend to prefer interests that are small and near in time relative to those that are significant but far down the road. It's sort of why we procrastinate. So what this idea does, really simply, is it just brings those faraway consequences into the here and now. It takes this aspect of climate change as part of human nature and addresses it in this simple, low-cost solution. So it builds feedback. Another way of thinking about it, too, is, you know, climate change can be understood as this problem of diffusion of responsibility. So I contribute a little bit, you contribute a little bit, and so on. And social psychologists know that when responsibility for diffusion, when responsibility is shared among many people, we're actually less likely to address the problem, because it's one of these problems of everyone is responsible, so nobody feels responsible. So what the placement of the warning label on the gas pump nozzle does is it takes this problem of diffuse origins and quite literally locates responsibility right in the palm of your hand. So now you're feeling a little more responsible for it. And if you think about it, as simple as the intervention is, there's actually nothing like it out there that connects us to this problem in quite a direct way. So I do think if there you are at the pump, there I am at the pump, and our neighbor's doing the same thing, if we feel a little closer to the problem, a little more responsible for it, if we start to ask the question, well, what am I supposed to do? What are my options? Just in asking that question, if a community asks it, if a country asks it, that creates so much space for change, and that enables so much opportunity for reform from government and business.
You know, in my brain, I'm thinking, okay, someone at a pump, they look down, they see or don't see whatever information's in front of them. You know, they're it's advertising or not advertising, and they look across the harbor, they see the stacks at the power plant, and they go, well, this is just my car. It's only my that's only a small piece. Look, it's nothing like what I'm seeing across the harbor.
Yeah, and isn't that the case? That's sort of the case today, where we're able to sort of say, well, I'm just one person. I'm just a small, you know, contributor to this problem. And if you're saying that, if I'm saying that, if we all say that collectively, there's no real impetus to address it. So even though you're right, we all make, you know, a relatively small contribution to this problem as individuals, you know, collectively our actions are altering the chemistry of our planet. And so what this thing does is all of a sudden you feel just a little bit more connected to it, a little more responsible. And if we can cause, you know, individual members of a community to feel that way, if you can cause indeed an entire marketplace to feel that way, you know, if I'm General Motors, if I'm Ford, to me, that's the sound of money. Oh my goodness, here's a segment of the marketplace that's no longer satisfied with the existing solution. I better, you know, put some money in research and development, maybe retool my plant, bring to market a solution that'll cater to that demand that we've now just stimulated care of this low-cost intervention. So it's a simple little, you know, I spend about an hour in this talk saying why we need this. At the end, I kind of ask the question, why wouldn't we do this? Here we are facing perhaps what many have called the greatest challenge that humanity has ever faced, and I'm just asking for a sticker. Like, it's a pretty easy intervention. We should be able to do this, and I think it can be a nudge in a more sustainable direction.
Yeah, it is a fairly simple ask. It's been almost a decade since An Inconvenient Truth, the film by Vice President of the United States at the time, Al Gore. You know what? I heard this discussion earlier. Did we perhaps maybe shoot ourselves in the feet calling it climate change or global warming as opposed to climate change?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. A lot of people that are concerned about how do you communicate this problem, they focus on those sort of finer terms. I asked the question, you know, borrowing from a Canadian communications icon, Marshall McLuhan, his famous line, the medium is the message. So say that film, Al Gore's film, or say that newspaper article I might read about this idea, the medium being the message, I sort of receive that message as almost a passive observer. There it is, you know, on the screen. There it is in that book or that newspaper article. What's unique about what I'm advocating for is it's actually the gas pump nozzle that is the medium. That's the message. And what it says is no longer are you a passive observer. So the information on the label might be something you've read before, but you're no longer receiving that as a passive observer. You're now an active participant in this, and I think if you can cause that shift, that's something that heretofore, in all sorts of ways of communicating this problem, be it film, books, internet, and so on, we've actually yet to have accomplished. So I think this is a really interesting way forward.
It's a string around our finger.
Yeah, that's what it is. And imagine if we all sort of felt that, what that might enable.
Coming up tonight, 6:30, and this is a free gathering.
Yes, it's free.
All righty. So it starts 6:30, and it's at the Schulich School of Law, Dalhousie campus.
That's correct.
All righty, sir. Thank you very kindly. I appreciate having a few moments of your time, and hopefully the weather won't get in your way of getting over there this afternoon.
Exactly. It's a bit sloppy, but I encourage people to show. So thank you very much for having me on your program.
No, absolutely. It's been a treat. Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. Robert Shirky is with the group Our Horizon. He is a lawyer and executive director for that nonprofit group, and he'll be speaking tonight at Dal at the Schulich School of Law at 6:30 about their campaign to have municipalities across Canada require climate change information on gas pumps. You think that'll help? Do you think that'll make any difference whatsoever in your mind about the issue of climate change? And, I'm not sure how I feel. I guess every step forward is a step forward, right? All right, 2:56. Almost to 3 at top of the hour. We're going to go into the newsroom, find out what's going on there. We're going to get an update from Michael Pickup, the Auditor General. He'll be a guest on our show coming up next hour. And we're going to talk about the ECC 22, the MMA fights coming here to Halifax in just a couple of days' time. Looking forward to a chat about that here on the program. And before we wrap up, it's also some discussion on Off the Hook. What is Off the Hook? That's about sustainable food. And Dalhousie University has been involved with that program. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to hear some more politics here this afternoon. And, of course, we'll be joining our Municipal Matters panel. We got a couple of people in studio, one of whom I know you are familiar with, Tim Bousquet. He's been here on the past Wednesdays. And for her debut on the program, we'll be welcoming Kate Watson to the show. That's all on the way, coming up between 4 and 5 o'clock. News on the way. We'll be continuing our show on the other side of that. Stick around.